Hey, honey. What's up?
Hey, Joel. How's it going? Long time no talk.
Yeah, it has been a while. So we do these podcasts because I want to catch up with people to see what they're up to. And like part of that's like researching backgrounds, right? Like we go through it. So like usually, you know, when we're just hanging out or whatever, I'm not researching you, but when we have you on a podcast, we do that. And one thing I noticed, it's like consistent through like your life is this, like you work a lot, man. You work hard and you always like go the extra mile and you always got something cooking and something extra cooking. Like you went to Notre Dame and got 2 degrees, not a major and a minor, but you did graphic design and computer science, which to me was like, wow, that's a lot of work. How was that experience to like go back to your education doing 2 degrees at the same time?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story behind that. Like, actually, I didn't start off as a computer science major whenever I first got to Notre Dame. I actually was a computer engineering major. And then I took the first electrical engineering class. And after staying up doing until 2 a.m. doing the first like homework assignment for electrical engineering, I'm like, yeah, this ain't for me. I like hardware, but not this much. So I switched up to CS. And, you know, I dropped my EE class. I was still taking my CS classes. And I realized like through like various projects and stuff like that, that a lot of these like user interfaces were looking pretty subpar, not only like my own, but just like in general, like computer scientists or like programmers don't necessarily have focus on like, you know, aesthetics or usability. So there's a special program at Notre Dame called the Riley program that I entered. And I chose design because, you know, it just goes hand in hand with like computer science or just building applications in general. I enjoyed doing some front end stuff like building out websites and such. I just felt like design would be really helpful. And the way the Riley program works is if you get accepted into the Riley Honors program, you can do 2 degrees, one from the College of Engineering, which the computer science program at Notre Dame is in the College of Engineering. And then you can get any liberal arts or arts and letters degree. So I did computer science and graphic design. I know some people have done like computer science and Japanese. A lot of mechanical engineers do like mechanical engineering and economics for supply chain sort of things. So it's a really unique program and experience. And it was kind of rough, though, because I wanted to do it in 4.5 years rather than 5 because I didn't want to stay in Indiana for one more winter. And so I was like overloading on credit. So taking 22 credit hours during like multiple semesters was not that fun. But
yeah,
you know,
it wasn't like you were just doing the academics either. Like you had a whole slew of like extracurricular activities and whatnot.
Yeah. On. Yeah. Time management's the name of the game, though. That's the thing. Like, there's not enough hours in a day, but if you have a routine and you stick to it, it makes it really manageable. And rather than procrastinating, it was a matter of getting ahead and staying ahead of your workload was really made it way more manageable and less stressful.
Probably kind of helped you for like keeping the hustle going after college too, I'd have to imagine.
Yeah, kind of. I will say that my time management skills have probably deteriorated since leaving college just because given day-to-day basis is so much entropy and nothing is a set routine like it is during college.
Right, chaos.
Yeah, it's a lot of chaos, especially living in New York City. Like, I have yet to fall into a routine here. I've been living here for 2 years. Like,
it's very distracting up there.
Yeah, yeah, lots of going on. Can't even decide what to do because there's too many things to choose from.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's intense. It's kind of cool. Like, I always wish like nobody ever told me about New York City when I was a youngster, like in the movies and stuff. But then I was like,
yeah,
like later I was like, man, I totally live here. But you know, we got 5 kids. So New York isn't very real.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah, I didn't even know about New York City like that either. Whenever I was working at my first job, I visited New York on business because we had headquarters here. And like just landing in the airport and just taking in the energy, I was like, wow, I have to live here at some point in my like life, you know, and yeah, might as well get out of the way whenever like, you know, you're in your 20s and before you get married and have like kids. So here I am.
Yeah, the dual degrees thing, that sounds interesting to me and almost like it should be the default, because I think like one area of focus really doesn't give people all the time a very well-rounded education, you know, like in terms of like finding mm-hmm. a job and stuff, right? Like the yeah. idea that, you know, the cliche is the programmer UI, right? Like this looks like a programmer made it and it's some sort of,
yep,
you know,
add a button.
Like every property ever is just sitting on the page in a kind of a unstyled mess.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned like the programmer UI, right? Because, you know, I'm sure you've noticed or whatever, just a common conversation on Twitter is like, oh, should designers code, you know? But I always want to say, like, the question that we should be asking more is, shouldn't developers design, right? Like, we're designing for these platforms and everything, like, or we're developing these mobile applications, these web applications, you know, with the very engaging, like user experience being at the forefront of it. And I think it would, like, help developers more to, like, study up or at least read up more on design concepts, especially when it comes to, like, you know, basics, like fundamentals, like color theory, maybe grids, typography, etc.
Yeah, I went to art school too. That's my background. I don't have a computer science degree. I never like studied that formally and self-taught, but like time and time again, just the color, composition, typography, all that stuff. Like that's, I mean, like you said, that keeps coming back and it's so useful. And not only is it like, I don't do design, like it's like giving birth kind of to me. Like I'm not very great at design. But like having the vocabulary and being able to communicate with designers has been such a big help because I can, you know, talk about it and I know how to critique and like have a conversation, which is
exactly. Yeah. That's exactly where I think it's been most beneficial at in my career. You know, I've never worked professionally as a designer. Like I gravitated towards the software engineering side of things just because, you know, I love programming and I love building things. But where it really helped, like wherever I was working as a front end engineer, or like just doing front-end development, I'd be able to talk with other designers and, like you said, articulate why I think a certain like UX pattern or like something visual is not successful or how it could be stronger, you know, in a well-mannered way and speak like their language to offer feedback and maybe suggestions on how we can tweak it or just tweak it and like communicate why I made those changes. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense to me, you know? So it's been priceless in that regard.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I notice a lot of like people that have that kind of background and there's quite a few in the industry, especially, you know, around front end development, like people that do front end development, you know, a lot of times there is going to be more crossover, right? Like something that's like strictly a database or strictly works on servers, you know, they don't necessarily have to speak that language. So I think like crossing over is always great for anybody.
Yeah.
But you primarily did front end development for the first part of your career. How long have you been out of school anyway? How long has that been?
Oh man, it's wild. This year would be like fourth year in December.
And then you went to, did you go to IBM like right after or after school? Yep. Was there a gap?
Yeah. I chilled at home for like 3 months before moving to Texas and moved to Texas and worked at IBM for a year before peacing out.
What were you working on there?
So I was in Watson. I worked on our Chef Watson application, doing some front end work there, a little bit of back end work there as well. And then there was a second project I worked on that I don't know if it ever launched. It was a news platform powered by Watson. And that's where actually, it's funny enough, that project was my first time building something with like something substantial, at least with like React. And yeah, that's where I got really into React development or whenever I first used it. So
when did you get into Ember? Because for a long time you were a pretty big advocate of using Ember.
I got into Ember in college, actually. Oh, cool. Yeah, so I took an interaction design class in college in the School of Design, and I used Ember for, I actually learned Rails and Ember for my interaction design course. Because we had a project that was like redesign a user interface of your choice that you think is like lacking or subpar. And the one UI that always constantly frustrated me from my school was the class registration or the class search interface. So I built like this 3-column like UI that I could have probably done in vanilla Rails, but like it would have been just like disgusting, like handling all of that state with like jQuery. So I'd like, you know, React wasn't really popping then. Backbone was a thing, but I didn't feel like building my own framework or like building all the pieces together to like build it, you know? Actually, I'd built like the first prototype of it with Vue.js. It was like 0.10 back then. Didn't have a router, didn't have Vuex, didn't have Vue CLI. It was really bare bones, and I'd done like a manual routing system for it. Mm-hmm. And it was nice, but I switched over to Ember because I found it by just like doing some research, and I was building the backend in Rails, and it just like was a match made in heaven. You know, Yehuda used to be a core contributor to Rails, and like now helps maintain and build on top of Ember. So I did an Ember tutorial and I rewrote the entire project using Ember, and I was just able to iterate really quickly on it because Ember was just pretty straightforward to me with using it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like good kit and it's been around for a long time. It's like fully stable, but like it has this like tiny market share. And I always try to figure out why, like why is Ember like not get more recognition or playtime than these other frameworks? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've thought about it more recently because even nowadays we use it even at my current company, DigitalOcean. But I think one of the few things with Ember is, or why it doesn't have more market share, is a couple of reasons. Or at least back in the day, if you had asked me the same question, I would have said probably, you know, you have Google and you have Facebook for like, you know, Angular and React respectively and their backing. But I don't even know if that's the case anymore because like you have Vue.js, which even though Evan, like you, the creator, was at Google's Creative Lab 5, it doesn't have any major like, you know, sponsor behind it. But I think Ember didn't pick up as much market share or like popularity primarily because, you know, it's a little bit hefty. Well, not hefty in a sense, but rather like, you know, it's two things. It's really opinionated, and some people don't like opinionation, you know. I personally do because, most of the time, I personally like opinionation, especially when collaborating with other people, because it takes away the amount of thinking you have to do on structuring things. But I think, you know, that can also be a turnoff for some people. And additionally, not everybody wants to, like, build something that needs, like, a huge router, like, that needs a router with it. But I do like, or that ships with like a router, perhaps. Like React was very lean and very straightforward. But I do think that there are companies out there that use Ember, and the ones that do use it are really productive with it. You know, LinkedIn has thrown their entire weight behind it. I'm pretty sure Square uses it on their web platform. Who else? Let's see. Square, Twitch used to be an Ember shop, but I think they rewrote their front end in React. We were pretty good with that DO, and it's just been helpful. And I think that opinionation really comes into play whenever you're collaborating with people because you have like a set way of organizing your project. Whereas with React, you can just do whatever you want. Like, or React, Angular, Vue, structure is like up to the user, right?
Yeah.
But Ember is like kind of, there's like not one right way, but there's like a very opinionated way of doing these things or structuring your project.
Like the Rails approach, right? Like where we
exactly
take a lot of the opinions out of it so we can like quit talking about this stuff and just do it the Rails way.
Exactly.
The Ember way.
Convention over configuration.
Yeah, I kind of go back to the like the idea of major label versus indie where, you know, like being able to hire a team of a dozen evangelists is not something you can do if you're, you know, you don't have major corporate backing. And that's like been apparent since the start of it. Because it's good shit, and I really think people should check it out, like, and add it to their comparison list to find out what's right for you, right? Like, maybe those opinions, like, after you spend a little bit of time on them, maybe they make more sense and they actually work out.
Yeah, exactly. And I do know that, for the most part, I think that, like, a lot of people that do use Ember, a lot of these companies, or even dev shops that do build out products using Ember, a lot of them, like, they may have some critiques about the framework, but a lot of them do enjoy using the framework itself and having great things to say about it. I do as well. I think it's a great framework to use. And even they have such a focus on, like, you know, making the whole developer experience, like, straightforward and friendly. And also, like, even upgrading an old Ember app. Like, I had a client where I upgraded their Ember app from, like, it was something really old, like 1.9 to, like, 2.5, and even upgrading it was really painless. Like, it was just impressive how stable it was and how little friction there was to like get it up to the latest and greatest version. I think we'll see the same thing like from Ember 2 to 3, but then like I think we all remember Angular going from Angular 1 to Angular 2 and the whole fiasco that went around with that. But I think that the Ember team really wants to have that stability without like stagnation, as I think the saying goes, with the framework.
It's been my experience with Rails too. Like that crossover it's so like evident, right? Like that Yehuda was involved and he was involved with both. And because, you know, I still use like gems that haven't been updated in like a dozen years for Rails. Mm-hmm. And like having that stability, like it's, yeah, you're not solving as many puzzles, which is fun. Like when you get into a React app, you're really solving puzzles, and that can be fun.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes you just want to get in there and like make something. That's how Egghead was built, right? Like I did a Rails tutorial, and the next week I had like a subscription site up and running and was taking subscriptions, and that is awesome.
Yeah. That's so dope. Yeah. I used Vic Ramone's Ember tutorial, and I was like, it was actually Ember plus Rails. So it was like perfect. And I just did that in like an afternoon, went through it. I'm like, wow, this really makes sense. And I just rewrote like my interaction design project using it in like 2 hours. And I was like, wow, this framework's actually really dope, you know? And I used it for another like data mining final project with Django, and just seeing how it played well together with all of these other like backend technologies was really cool as well.
Yeah, that's cool. So you kind of shifted though, like you switched jobs. You're in Austin, you moved to New York and started work at DigitalOcean, and they kind of shifted your focus a little bit.
Yeah, it was weird. I spent like my first 10 months, 8 to 10 months at DO doing front end work, but now for I'm like the last almost a year and a half now, I guess it is. I've been doing backend work actually.
Yeah. What are you using?
Shoot. On a given day, let's see. I write a lot of Go, like pretty much primarily Go. Like there's some rail services that we have at DO, like for like our cloud API and like our API gateway, but like I mostly just write Go on a day-to-day basis.
Did they start as a Rails app?
I think API and cloud all start off as a Rails app from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah, I think at the beginning or the inception, like, you know, the core experience was like a Rails app. But we moved like a few years ago, or at least before I joined, we started introducing like, you know, Go and moving, like building out new services in Go and rewriting some older services in Go as well.
So how's that like writing Go compared to writing JavaScript? How's that like experience been for you?
To be honest, it's been pretty good. Like, I'm not going to rag on JavaScript, you know, but like something I'm realizing, and this goes from like all of these like dynamic languages, right? Like I haven't had to deal with the statically typed language since I did like when since I was writing like C++ in college, and back whenever I was building like Android apps, Java. But, you know, with those, I wasn't really doing backend work, so I didn't really get to see, like, the benefit of, like, strong typing. But, like, I dabbled with, like, both Python. Like, you know, I've used Rails, I've used Django, I've built some Flask applications, I did some Node.js work while I was at IBM. Static typing is just so nice to have. Like, something I'm realizing with both Rails and just, like, all these other dynamic languages is that you get scared to refactor things if you don't have test coverage to like make sure you didn't break things, or you make sure you didn't break like, you know, like there's make sure there's no regressions, right? But I've been doing a lot of things like, you know, with statically typed languages, just been on point. Like I can just refactor things, and sure, my code won't compile, and meaning that something's broken, but you know, it helps reduce those chances of like runtime errors, you know? And it's just been a pleasure to work with. And it's kind of hard going back to doing like doing front end or like doing writing JavaScript, or like, well, front end JavaScript, not so much, because I don't get burned nearly as much as I do with like some whenever I do back end work. But like going back to doing just back end work in other languages like Ruby and Python has been kind of like weird with the lack of types, because I got to write more tests to make sure things work as expected.
Yeah, you get spoiled, right?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, I think like I've done a lot of like training and teaching people like the basics of JavaScript and frameworks, and like the number one killer for anybody trying to learn it is typos. Like it's constantly typos, and that's something that a nice, you know, compiled static language, you just don't get that same experience.
Yeah, I guess that's like the beauty of like, you know, TypeScript is getting there, but even then it's not all the way there. But then you do have these other languages or like that popping up, like Elm's gaining traction, right, in some like niche regard. But yeah, it's just a nice thing to have. Types are a really nice sanity check.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, so you like Go is on my list. I haven't ever touched it. And like, could you describe like what it's used? Like, what's the use case in general for Go? Why would somebody use it to begin with?
I think Go has a lot of benefits, right? Like, so I can talk about it from like deep like language internals or language functionality perspective, and then from like a broader engineering organization or just even software engineering
But like to me, like what type of project does it make sense? Like where you go, oh, we should be using Go for this for sure. Like it's the one we should be using. Like it's kind of a systems programming language, right? Like close to the metal.
Yeah. But we use it for building out all of our services that our API gateways or most of the services that the API gateway talks to. But like it really is good for building things like, you know, these small self-contained services. There's a lot of nice features within it. And like using an RPC framework like gRPC with Go, for example, is really great. And just building out these small self-contained services has been just dead simple while using Go. Whereas I don't think that same sort of simplicity would be there or readily apparent with something like Node.js, for example.
Yeah, so you're building out like microservices, for lack of a better word, yep. Right? Like building small contained services using Go. What's gRPC? I don't think I've heard that. I know it's remote procedure call, but what's gRPC?
So basically, it's an RPC framework invented by Google. It's open sourced. It's based off a tool that they had internally. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. But yeah, it's an RPC framework that uses protocol buffers, that extend protocol buffers to define these RPC methods. And it's really good for just creating various services that talk to one another, because you can define the structure of the service, like its methods, their inputs, their outputs, in the protocol buffer file, right? And you can compile it. And the beauty of protobuf is that you can write the protobuf file once and it compiles in multiple languages. So you can compile it to Go, C++, Java, Ruby, Python, Clojure, I say JavaScript, Node.js. Yeah, it's pretty sick.
So is a protocol buffer like a contract then? Like, so you can build this contract that's protocol buffer and then distribute it to different systems that can use that to communicate? Is that...
Exactly. Yeah. You implement the server, and it also generates a client library that you can then import in other programs. Like, if you had a server for like, I don't know, in the context of Egghead, like the video streaming service or something, right? And you had a service like that. It had its own database. Cool. You have an RPC method. It's like, oh, get like a course video. And you basically just say like, get course videos for user. You basically define a request that takes it as an input the user ID, returns a list of videos that may have a URL, and just implement that in the server. The server will just call the database, serialize that into the protobuf, and return it. But then, and from like your Rails app could then consume that gRPC Ruby client and call that method that could be in a Go server, like could be, talking to a Go server, right? And return that and like call it, get the response back and return it to your front end or render it, whatever you need to do with it. So it's kind of like self-contained in that way. And you can scale them up independently based on what's like getting traffic.
Yeah, that sounds pretty nice.
The more traffic. Yeah.
So getting off the programming languages for a second, I want to talk about your projects. Cause like I said, like there's this thread, right? Like we're, and he's always doing something, right? Like you always got something going on. It's never just one thing. And you got some side projects that you work on. And one of them I saw was interfacelovers.com. And can you tell us what interfacelovers.com is?
Yeah, Interface Lovers. So I built this with two people last year. It's an online, I built it with Timothy Achumba. He's a designer at Facebook based out of London, and William Channer, who runs Panda Studio. You might know him from the Panda Chrome extension and like Panda Jobs, etc. Shouts out to William and Tim. I see you. It's an online digital magazine where we interview various product designers and creatives in the industry, or in like primarily in the tech industry. And yeah, it's just like it was a fun project. Will approached me and Tim saying, yo, let's build this. And I was like, heck yeah, let's do it, you know?
Yeah,
blast to build.
You got a big stack too. Like you've got more than a couple of interviews, and I read some of them and they're pretty interesting. It's cool. I love to see how people work and what they think, and you know, like their job and describing that stuff is pretty great.
Timothy's an amazing designer, and I was just honored to like work with him and even collaborating with Will. Me and him have always been trying to collaborate for like the last 2 years, and it finally made it happen. But like Tim's just amazing, and it was just an amazing experience building it. And I was writing PHP, and I haven't written PHP since like undergrad for like research, but like it wasn't that bad. It was fun. Using Kirby was a really dope content management system.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was on point.
Yeah, PHP's made some strides, and I think it always gets a little bit wrecked. Yeah. Like Laravel, and like there's other tools, and the language itself has evolved over the years to not just be a WordPress plugin language.
Yep, you got Hack or HHVM and all that stuff. I think we can thank Facebook in a sense as well for kind of pushing it forward, because they kind of have to, because their entire infrastructure pretty much depends on it.
Yeah. So one of the cool things I saw on Interface Lovers was this idea that the people that get interviewed, or designers in general, create SoundCloud mixes, or no, were they were on Spotify mixes.
Yeah, we have both actually, yeah.
Yeah, so like, where's the idea of that come from?
I think that was Will's idea, actually. So Will's, like, this entire project was conceived by Will, and it used to be a Medium blog, right? But then he, like, wanted to give it its own dedicated site because he wants to add more features onto it that Medium didn't support. And so these designer mixes were pretty cool, because we know whenever we're all working, or not all of us, some people like to work in silence, but generally people like to listen to music while they're working, especially like creatives. I know me programming, I like listening to instrumentals. So having that like playlist, it'd be cool to ask them like, oh, what are you bumping, or what are you playing while you're designing, you know? And I like that idea as well. It was a nice touch to it, and it seems like it was pretty well received. People liked listening to it on Spotify.
Yeah, I was like, I kind of want to steal that and have our instructors make mixes. They were down for it. I just think it's neat. I love listening to what somebody else is interested in and discovering new music, and that's just such a cool way to do it. Like, I respect this person's work, and now I get to also see what they like to listen to. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and like music tells you a lot about not somebody's personality, but just like another, like, it's kind of a cool thing to know about somebody, right? You're learning more about a person through their music taste.
Yeah, it's one of my indicators whether we're probably going to be friends or not. I'll admit that.
Yeah, I mean, hey, makes sense though. Like, a lot of, you know, me and my friends have a lot of similar music taste.
Yeah,
it's what it is.
So you're also working on...
Can't be like...
Go ahead. Sorry about that.
I was going to say, you can't be driving around with like your friends and like pass somebody aux cord and you hate what they're playing, right?
Yeah, right. Some Katy Perry. No offense to Katy Perry fans. That's your business, but you know.
Yeah, ain't my cup of tea.
So you're also, Seeker is what I've been talking to you about lately, which you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, it's funny because like I haven't really gotten out in the limelight with this yet,
but
it's cool to talk about it.
Keep it.
Oh no, dude, it's fine. Yeah, I need to overcome this fear of keeping things in secret, because you know it's not going to help nobody. Seeker, right? So another component of Interface Lovers, right, is that we have a job board section, and I figured like using Panda Jobs for that was cool, and Seeker was just born from like that experience of building that job board into Interface Lovers. So basically, Seeker is a way for people to that run content sites or various content sites, or even other things like open source, right? For a way, and just another way to monetize your content. Because we have a job board on Interface Lovers because we know various designers will be coming and reading our interviews, and we have a lot of jobs for design or even development on our site. So yeah, Seeker is like the same type of job board. It's a way to you sign up, you connect your Stripe account, you set your price and your duration for your jobs, and you have a link that companies can go to and start submitting job postings to your website. And another beauty, the beauty of it is that they can also, like, you get paid for it. It's cool. There's an API for it. So if you want to pull your jobs into Egghead or something like that, for example, you can just call Seeker's API and get the job postings and just rent like via JavaScript and just render them into your website. So yeah, it's been working on that for like a while. I should have launched a long time ago, but I'm a perfectionist, and it's a blessing and a curse at the same
time. Got to launch, man. Got to get it out there.
I know. I'm finishing touches.
Yeah. It'll be ready when it's ready, right? So what are you using to build Seeker?
It's actually interesting, right? The stack I'm using for this is Vue.js in the front end with Django in the back end with a Postgres database.
How's that been, like using Vue?
You know, like I mentioned earlier, I'd use Vue way, 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 way back in the day. Yeah, it's come a long way, but I like how it has a CLI for getting up and started easily. Vue.x to me is way simpler than Redux. Cognitively stressful at least. And this was a little bit simpler to use. And Vue Router has been pretty on point as well. And like, what I like about it is that these are all out of the box experiences that ship with like Vue itself. So it's nice and officially supported or maintained by like Evan and everybody else.
Yeah, Evan gets to work on it full time. I don't know if he's the only full time developer on the project, but like he's just been amazing a shepherd for the project.
It's just wild.
Yeah, he's like continuously just impressive. And like, I don't know, I haven't checked it out yet. I kind of took a hiatus from learning like front end frameworks. Everybody's like, oh, there's a new framework. You got to learn this new framework. And I'm like, yeah. I'm going to take a break. I'm just going to take a year off and not learn a new framework for mm-hmm. a while. But Vue keeps calling to me. I'm like, because people love it. Like, it has such a passionate yeah.
following. I'm like that. And like, you know, I'm very energetic about a lot of like, you know me, I'm like, I like learning. Like I guess as nerdy as it sounds, I like learning. And like whenever I find like learn something new, I will like, and that really excites me, I will gas it up or at least give it props where like props are due, just because I think that I can, like, I believe in it. Like back, like I used to evangelize Ember back in the day, and I still do vouch for Ember, especially if you're working on a really large project. I will say the same for Vue as a framework. It's really straightforward and easy to learn and just really approachable. And it's like a great mix of like, I think it's like just a good mix of, it's like you have React. That's like, I guess the most bare bones in a way. But then like, I think Vue sits in the middle, like with the, of like React and Ember on that scale of things, you know, from unopinionated to opinionated, even though it's a little bit more closer to React. But I just like having like that. I personally don't like JSX all that much. I mean, just a, I guess, personal preference. Just, I like it in some regards, but then in other times I'm just like, okay, now we got CSS and JS and this is just all too much for me, you know? But just having that one flat single file component with like your template, your JavaScript and your styles all there, and like the style, like the scoping of the styles to a Vue component is really nice and actually solves a main problem that I think a lot of developers have, which is like context switching, just like having to constantly switch files and think about different language, like just think about how everything meshes together and all that. Since you have everything like one file, is less stressful because you have all of it right there in front of you and you can always keep it at the top of your mind.
Yeah, I keep like, and Vue impresses me also. And then like what we talked about previously, like the major label versus indie label, right? Like it's yeah. totally indie. Like it doesn't have a massive, you know, it doesn't have an ad network or, you know, a giant social network behind it. It's just, it's been Evan and, you know, just this constant, you know, like grassroots marketing, and like, it's just blown up. It's like, I root for Vue over all the other frameworks, just in terms of like getting people to check it out and think for their next project.
Back in 2014, whenever I like first used it, it was interesting the different type of sites that I was being used for, right? It wasn't necessarily being used for like these single page applications like Backbone, Angular, and Ember were, but rather for these highly interactive like websites that just had like a very interactive experience. Like just one core screen, and maybe it's like animating a lot of things or drawing a lot of things, but it's evolved to being able to build out these single page applications like in a very sane and user-friendly like manner, and I vibe with that a lot. It's really awesome.
Yeah, so you've used Django and Rails, and I'm just curious, like personally, because I've used both too, but like why would you go Django over Rails? Like what's the advantage that you get there? Python?
So I like Python a lot. Python was my first real scripting language I learned, so it holds a special place in my heart. And after doing C and C++ for like two semesters of college, you know, it was kind of a godsend for like building up these like quick and dirty scripts, you know. But I think I chose Django because actually I'm working on Seeker. I was planning on working on it with a buddy of mine, and he's a huge Python, like fan of Python, Django. And it's actually my buddy Justin. He built out Button Down Email, which is like this new newsletter site. High key recommend checking it out. It's really a really awesome experience. So we're going to work on Seeker together, but then Button Down kind of blew up. So he's just been putting a lot of his energy into that. But I ended up just keeping Django in Vue because I'd already started building it. So why not, you know? And me and him do code reviews for each other and all that. So it's been cool just to be able to bounce ideas off of one another and just be able to look at each other's code and have that type of person in my camp.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like when we started Egghead, that was the choice for me too. Was I've built stuff with Django, I've read a few Rails tutorials. Which one should I use? And then like everybody I know was building stuff with Rails, right? Like they like their marketing sites or their apps or whatever. So you know, somebody told me it was like just choose Django and or just choose Rails and build it and quit waffling back and forth about the stack, which is a pretty good suggestion generally.
Yeah. I also liked how much Django had out of the box, right? Like, what Rails essentially just saying was like, oh, there's a gem for that, you know? But having, like, being able to just install Django and, like, really the only thing I have to install is, like, Django REST framework for the API. And then, like, you know, it comes with the way of handle, like, auth built in. It comes with an admin panel built in.
The admin panel is sweet.
It's so on point. Yeah, it's amazing. And even, like, it also comes built with some other goodies. Like, even comes, it ships with, like, a forgot, like, you know, a password flow for, like, resetting a user's password, you know? Like, all of these small features were, like, really nice and, like, help cut down on, like, development time of a whole bunch of other things as well. So I'm actually glad I have learned it. I've never worked with it professionally, but it's still been fun building out Seeker with it.
Yeah, that's cool. It's always fun to explore things deeper, too.
Yeah.
So you got anything else going on?
What else I have going on? Man, let me think. Not really. This is one, I mean, I'm working on a small project with some friends called Bombard. It's like a load testing service app, but that got put on the back burner as some things picked up on everybody else's plate. So that's on hiatus, but also gave me time to like just step back and focus on Seeker and getting the final stages of it, like just getting it prepared and everything. Anything else I got going on? No, not really. Just mostly that. Oh, and teaching on every Wednesday.
Like teaching, where are you teaching at?
Oh, I teach at the School of Visual Arts in Manhattan. I teach interaction design, or I co-teach actually with my buddy Greg, who runs a design studio or consultancy called Partner and Partners in Manhattan.
Yeah, teaching's great because it's like the best way to solidify your skills and kind of figure out your fundamentals and base.
Yeah, and it's so rewarding too, seeing just like growth, like seeing from like, oh, I remember whenever you're at point A and you've come all the way to like point B, and just seeing just like the progression over time and improvement in their skills, what really like is rewarding to me as well.